Is it okay that I called you Red Ranger? Is that all right? You okay with that?
Yeah. Okay. I'm down. I'll be Red Ranger.
All right.
I mean, I'm the wrong race, but...
Oh, whatever. Would you prefer White Ranger?
That seems worse. I was going to go with Blue Ranger, but...
Okay. You are listening to the Furler Bros Tech Podcast, episode 263, hashtag made by Furler Bros.
Season 6, episode 263 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October the 9th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and Mighty Morphin into his Power Ranger suit is my brother James Furlow.
Oh man, that's a throwback. They got like a movie coming out or something. That's a new TV series, or I don't know. I can't keep track of them anymore.
You're so out of the loop, man.
Are they using like dinosaur blood now? Like what's their twist?
They got a big old movie coming out.
Boom!
With like real actors and actresses in it too, like Bryan Cranston Zordon, and what's her name?
Does the trailer look remotely interesting?
Oh, it looks terrible.
It's still a kids' movie.
Yeah,
it's like when the explosion happens in the ground before them, and they all kind of do their jump and fall away thing. Like they're all sat in a sound studio and made those noises. How should they have to get paid to make fools of themselves?
Right?
Probably not that much, to be honest. Right. They were stars.
Well, the best part about it was like you were, especially with the original Power Rangers. Like all of that was a Japanese show that. They cut all the scenes with the Japanese actors and where they didn't have their suits on and then just refilmed them with the American actors. Yeah. So they're like completely separate. Like,
wow.
Which is part of the reason why it worked is they just Americanized this old movie. This week was
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That kind of makes it more awesome.
It's the reason
Mighty
why.
And Morphin, really.
Yeah, it's the reason why the Yellow Ranger didn't have a skirt, but the Pink Ranger did, even though the Yellow Ranger was a girl. Because in
how do you know this?
I don't know.
People should not know. Yeah, but how old were you when you learned this fact?
Look, it's been kind of a.
Were you
it's
in
been
middle school?
I was probably three years ago. Okay.
Okay. There we go. You just happen to see an article like, oh, interesting. I'm just going to read this because I'm killing time as opposed to doing deep research on it.
Kind of, yeah.
I've watched some of those old shows. Like, they have clips someone on YouTube or Netflix. And you... and they're pretty campy.
Like, oh, yeah. Like,
wow, that acting is so... The logic of the bad guy. I remember we used to be able to predict when the commercial was coming because it was the formula was so – it was just the same thing
formulaic.
Over and over.
Yeah, and which is pretty amazing because we were really young. Like we weren't astute in the art of editing and movie making.
Yeah.
But yet it was just – they made it so obvious of like, okay, the guy grew up. I guess it's time to – time to become a,
yeah.
It's funny. I have a friend, a college buddy of I and I who like we went through this really long talk about how to make a modernized Power Rangers that would be enjoyed by like kind of a what's it called?
Its concept is interesting.
Yeah, it actually is. It's not. It's.
I
not,
mean, it's a classic.
I mean, it's like, and I just think, if you were to go a little bit hard in this harder sci-fi, try to make it like entertaining personalities, but go like a little more Dark Knight, where it's like just a little bit grittier, a little bit more science fiction, and have the comedy be on the level of like an Avengers movie, which I realize that all of those things are like first in class.
Well, and I have a feeling in 10 years, Avengers is going to feel a little campy too, but that's
true.
We'll see.
But it's like, I feel like you could explain away it being like,
yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Yeah, maybe not full Dark Knight. Definitely not Batman v Superman. But I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think there could be a modern telling of it that would appeal to both kids and us.
Exactly. Us. whatever we are. I will say this. I've got one other show recommendation that I want to give out right now, because I started and finished all the episodes of this week. It's called One Punch Man. And it is great. It is an anime where it's like a satire on Dragon Ball Z sort of stuff.
Okay.
Like that kind of.
Do I have to know that for it to work?
No, not at all. Because he's just the one thing that some of the satire plays on the idea of like all of these guys have like these really cool complicated moves, and they're yeah. all like hyper personalities, and they talk a lot in between their lead up to fight and stuff. They'll go through these transformations as they become more powerful. And One Punch Man's entire gimmick is he can defeat anybody with one punch.
Yes.
And as a result suffers from some serious ennui, and he's just like
ennui.
Yeah, just like listlessness and just very disappointed by life. And he's like, I'm a superhero for fun. And that's his thing. And it's not fun anymore because nobody challenges him. And like I thought the premise would get really old after like two or three episodes. And it's like 12 episodes long, and it is so good. It is so
One
good.
One Punch Man. All right, I'll add that to the queue.
And yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
That's funny. Interesting.
We are not here to talk about that today, James.
No, we are not.
What we are here to talk about this week, like every week, will be technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their phones, their exploding phones, the marketing campaigns for their phones, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yeah, so, and this is legit disclosure. So it turns out that I can install Mac OS Sierra on my computer. I obviously don't have all the features, but apparently, like, I can do the upgrade. I didn't think so.
Nice.
But yeah, I can. So I'm running it now. Woo! Yeah,
nice.
I got on the auto install thing, and so I'm like, oh, I'm running it. So I've got, let's see how many devices I can get to do this. Okay, Siri. None. Awesome.
None.
That was perfect.
That was...
Okay, Siri. Jeez, what a joke.
Let me see if I can do it. Okay, Siri.
You actually did do it earlier by accident when we had you on speakerphone with Eleanor.
Really
but anyways,
funny.
I got it on my computer. I set up a keyword to turn on Siri when I say okay, and then Siri opens the app. But... apparently, none of my devices. Wait, no, it's not okay, Siri, is it? That's, oh my gosh, that's why. Whew, we're off the hook. I'm totally mixing companies
that's
here.
Really funny. Hey, Siri. That's it.
So, hey, Siri.
Gotcha.
All right, we got
my phone. My phone did it.
Yay. Now it's freaking out. Not my computer. Now my computer. What can I help you with? Thanks for the late reply. Jeez. Okay, all right. Stop. It is now. I'm trying to figure out what my string of sentences. Anyways, I got that all set up. Kind of like, you have to go in and turn on accessibility to accept voice commands to then open up apps, and you have to link it and give it a hot word. It's cool, whatever. It's neat. The reason for that disclosure is to tell you that I own a Mac. I own an iPhone. I own an iPad. I've ordered an Apple Watch. I am an Apple user, an Apple fanboy, highly biased when you are going to hear the main topic tonight. And furthermore, I founded and work for HPI. Oh, that's weird. However, I do not represent HPI or any of HPI's opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club, none of which are related to Google, Samsung, or Facebook. Well, I guess if you, competitors to all of them.
I guess if you, yeah, right. I guess if you're going to give that disclosure, I should give a similar disclosure of the fact that I own an iPad, an iPhone 6S, an Apple Watch, a Mac Mini, an Apple TV, and a PlayStation 4. I have pre-ordered a PlayStation VR that I'm going to buy on Thursday. So that is the context for which we will talk about Google VR. And yeah, it's,
yeah, so there you go. This is not an unbiased podcast, so deal with it.
We'll try to be fair, maybe.
Yeah, we'll fair ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. We won't engage in confirmation bias, where the only news we talk about will be inflating what decisions we've already made and the money we've already spent.
No promises on my end.
That's good stuff. Well, if you want to follow us throughout the week, you can definitely do that, and we'll be tweeting from our iPhones. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. I was super tempted to live tweet during the debates this evening, and then thought, you know, no, not worth it. And then if you want to follow me on Instagram, where I can post beautiful pictures of New Mexico, because that's where I was this weekend. I'll be at Next Wigan 4. Yeah, it's best man. Sweet. The best of men.
So he's hitched, huh?
I know, finally. Wow, it cool. happened.
That's exciting.
And she and I don't hate each other, which is really awesome. It's not something I could say of his previous girlfriends.
I am James Furlow on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. I was talking to a guy this weekend, and he was talking about, oh, yeah, connect with me on these different places. I was like, Snapchat? And he was like, no, I don't do that. I was like, huh, why not? You're getting old? He goes, no, there's a few things that they've enabled high school students to do that I fundamentally disagree with, so I am not participating with that network. And I was like, whoa, not the response I was expecting. Okay. So, and because he has high school kids, and he's like, no, I just don't want them to get involved in that, in that particular community. So I don't participate myself. It's like, wow.
That makes sense. I get that. If you don't want your kids doing that, and you gotta
totally
role model. I get that. I mean, whether or not you agree or disagree with his concerns for his teenagers, like, you got to respect at least the fact that he's being like, I'm just setting the example that I want to set, you know?
Yeah. And he's a guy where, like, he jumps on all sorts of social stuff. So it's not, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I was like, huh. All right. Anyways, I knew you'd appreciate that because you hate them.
It's funny. I was going to stand up for him. I was going to be like, yeah, but you can do that on pretty much, like, what do they enable?
It's a little different. Well, parents, he's like, you can't, no one else can see it. And that's the part that
okay.
concerns him.
Fair enough, but let's be honest. If you want to hide something online, Snapchat is probably the worst place to try to do that. Wow. Yeah, wow. But, you know, fair enough. Whatever. I mean, there's a different culture, and culture matters even on internet platforms. I will admit that is, you know, just ask Reddit and Pinterest. Basically the same site, different cultures, different successes.
Yes.
But,
I totally forgot that I listed this article for the first one. That's sweet. That's probably why you asked me about it, huh? At the beginning, you're like, what about those intros? Like, yeah, what about them? All right, I can do this. So
we can skip it if you want. You were the one who wanted to talk about it.
This is interesting. It's interesting because it's talking about how there's this fundamental divide. No, I can't do it. I'm good. I'll have to read about it. It's essentially, I'll just tease it. If you want to know more about this article, it's genuinely fascinating. FurlowBros.com, episode 263. We'll put the article on there. It'll also be in the email if you want to sign up for that. It's talking about essentially cyborgs and Christians.
All right.
Which are like, oh, that's weird. So essentially, transhumanists are people who want to do anything they can to augment their bodies to make them more Darth Vader like. And, you know, we've talked a lot about that on the show, and there's certain people who are.
That sort of paints a picture in an unfair light, I would say.
Darth Vader's awesome. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, but I mean,
who cares if he's evil? That's not the point.
The savior of the galaxy, Luke Skywalker, is also a cyborg, as we were reminded by episode 7.
Totally agree. And the point of the article is saying that there were a lot of Christians who were saying, you know, your body's a temple, don't mess with it, and things like that. And ultimately, they're talking about how those two are saying, no, it's okay. It's really the Christians who are coming over and saying, actually, no, we get behind a lot of this. Like, we take medicine to heal ourselves, and we think pacemakers are a good thing. And saying, you know, should you be chopping off your hand because an artificial hand is better than the current one that you have that exists?
They're
like, I disagree with that, but there's also not anything fundamentally wrong with it. So anyways, it kind of goes through some of those different arguments and how they're coming to an understanding that there can be some existence or coexistence, at least, that they do agree. It's fascinating. It's an interesting look at how technology and religion can work together. So I thought it was good.
And so I think Christianity works like is especially prescient for America, as it's our dominant religion. But I think it's interesting, no matter like what faith you're talking about, there are going to be questions because, you know, it's a big topic. It's a big topic in every religion, and how each religion deals with that and how each community questions that is especially in the better than human category of stuff. You know, it's hard to imagine people getting really excited about, oh, you lost your leg in an accident, you shouldn't have a prosthetic, or like you said, pacemakers. But it does become a question of, look, we can make you run really fast and jump really high. All you have to do is cut off both your legs. That seems to be a different question.
And I think ultimately, like, for a long time, that was actually considered a moral issue. And now they're saying, no, it's a tool just like anything else.
Yeah.
And so used for the right reason for good stuff, it can be good. And going for radical life extension is another thing that, you know, that's part of the whole transhumanist movement, right? Is live forever. And they're saying like, there's nothing wrong. Like anyone who's like, taking some sort of medicine to get healthier.
Right. Yeah.
Should the logical conclusion is a long thing. I mean, outside of the idea that, I don't want to say it. Often Christians come with a view, here we go, that, death is actually not natural. And it's a result of sin. Cause if you think about like Adam, he was never designed to actually die. That's one of the reasons why he seems to live a really long time. So this idea of, oh, we should try to put that off is, it's just like, that's okay. Now, I think the idea of trying to avoid death through technology, there's probably still some disagreement there, because I think Christians would argue there's really only one way to avoid death. It's an interesting article.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I like I said, I think even if you're listening and you're not Christian, it's a question that it's going to be a bigger question as time goes on, not a smaller one. It will be.
Yes. Yes. You know,
because especially as somebody who is like, I've stated since I was young, dude, I'm all up for when cybernetics are better than me. I'm all in, man. I don't care. It sounds awesome. I don't have any qualms about it. And I've had conversations with people about that and the questions of the morality of that and the ethics of that and the spirituality of that. What does that mean? And it means different things to different people. It is a very interesting question. Cause it transcends the whole tech stuff.
Yeah. But you know what? Yeah, totally.
But you know what doesn't transcend the tech stuff, but transcends this atmosphere?
Ooh.
Boeing CEO had a statement this week. So last week, Elon Musk announced that he was going to save mankind from itself by moving at least a small portion of us and a growing portion of us to Mars. And the Boeing CEO came out this week and was like, look, humans are going to Mars, but they're not doing it on a SpaceX rocket.
What?
They're doing it on a Boeing rocket.
Yes, let the race begin.
I know, I love it.
And in the meantime, Blue Origin's like, we're going to keep doing our rocket tests over here. Just slowly and quietly. Bezos is going to win. So it's all good.
I know. I will.
They just sell books. That's it. Oh, they're just small rockets. That's it. I've seen that. I've seen this rodeo. I know how it ends.
Yeah, Musk didn't seem to mind Milberg's statement, though. When he asked at the same conference whether he wants to be the first person to reach Mars, he replied, I think it's actually much better for the world if there are multiple companies or organizations building these interplanetary spacecraft. You know, the more the better. Anything, I think, that improves the probability of the future is good. And so multiple colonies doing it, I think, would be great. So I wanted to come to describe the architecture actually in the hopes that this would encourage companies and organizations around the world and perhaps do something like this. And then I think he went on to get into his Iron Man suit and punch the Boeing CEO in the face a bunch of times, basically said, now back off.
You know what? I think he genuinely believes that. His senior purpose is to save humanity. Yeah, everyone should be focused on this.
Yeah, I agree completely. I don't think he has any pride in it. I think he's doing this out of, like I said, I think he has this existential desperation because he really feels like we are on the cusp of disaster and this is the only way to preserve human life in the long term. I know.
That's what that
this is what he wanted. He wanted everybody. He wanted to poke NASA in the chest, poke Bezos in the chest, poke Boeing in the chest. No. We'll do it first. Try and beat us because he's super excited about going to Mars. So like you said, the race is on. It's starting to heat up and we'll see if the next president does anything about it.
No, they're not. It's pretty easy. They got other issues to deal with. Are you ready for the main event? The main-ish thing that happened this week?
We're done with appetizers. It's dinner time.
We are. So Google had an event, hashtag made by Google, and it was everywhere. That's why I said it. Anyways, in case you missed it, they made by Google because they announced a bunch of hardware plus a software thing, and we're gonna run through all of them. But what I thought was really interesting was Sundar Pichai. I'm sorry, man. he started the discussion. Sorry, dude. We're just going to jump around on links here.
That's all right, man.
Did you actually watch it? Let's start with that. Like, how big of a fan are you? Hour and a half.
I really...
Did you devote 90 minutes.
So I spent 4 days of the Oracle of Mountain View. I spent 4 days basically out of internet contact in New Mexico. So I came back expecting today to like do a deep dive on the press conference and watch the video, only to find out that Facebook had an equally large and number of announcements in length thing about
we'll balance each other out because I focused on Google.
Cool.
Perfect. Okay. So he started out his talk saying roughly every 10 years, there is a change in the platform of computing. So mid 80s, PCs, personal computers.
Okay.
Apple and Microsoft. Fast forward 10 years. The internet. Okay. Internet took off. It was kind of a thing. Happened. Still kind of happening. Some would argue we're at the baby stages of it. Others would argue, meh, it's done. We'll talk about that later. Fast forward 10 more years. Mobile phone, smartphones kind of take off. And for each of these, there were...
I feel like you skipped a decade.
No, I'm good. Mid-80s, mid-90s, mid-2000s?
Okay, all right, mids. You said, okay, all right, fair enough.
Yeah. 84, the Mac came out. Yeah, we're good. Mids. We're now in the mid-2010s.
You're right.
Okay.
I get where we're going now.
Okay, good. I didn't make it up. I'm just parroting what they said. So anyway, so Sindar, is that his name? I'm pretty sure that's his name.
Okay, just
fact check me. Okay. Fact checkers, do your thing. Anyways. oh my gosh. I distracted myself. So he says, we think we're on the cusp of that next computing platform. And we think that that's artificial intelligence.
Right, that clearly may be true.
And that's kind of what I heard him say that. And then they went on to talk about a bunch of hardware, just real quick. Phones, homes, casts, and VR. Show. How do you say
it? Did you catch that?
Say it again.
Sundar Pichai.
Sundar
Pichai.
Sundar Pichai.
Pichai. Man.
Sundar Pichai. You are all right. I got the
culturally
Sundar Pichai. All right, sweet. Dude, I'm like that with everybody, so it's all good.
That makes it okay.
So he thinks the next major platform is artificial intelligence, not something else, not Internet of Things.
Okay.
Not smart homes, not wearables, not virtual reality, not transportation of some sort, artificial intelligence.
Okay.
What's your gut reaction on that? I think it's full of garbage, but go ahead.
I think it is comical to try to break each decade into a tech category like that. I think that the idea that the PCs of 84 are somehow the same thing as the PCs of 95, and to just ignore all the other innovation that went on through and around it, is just, well, it's, I mean, it's it, the whole point of it is to, he's setting it, what he's setting it up is this paradigm thing. And there is truth from like a marketing perspective and from a business perspective. Where was the most money made? People selling personal computers to companies. Where was the most investment? Where were the biggest companies being born in the mid 90s, early 2000s in the internet? Well, then, you know, Apple, you know, became this meteoric company, largely on the back of smartphones, specifically the iPhone. And so if he's making the argument that similarly, the biggest companies of the next decade or the most growth in companies in the next decade are going to be born out of companies that invest and succeed with artificial intelligence, I'd say that's probably true.
Okay. Interesting. Do you think it's good? On one hand, you should never see it. You know, it's just kind of there doing its thing.
AI?
Yeah.
What is the AI?
Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to turn this off. Siri on my Mac keeps trying to pop up.
That's really funny.
So it's checking me again. Yeah, if it works well, like you don't notice it. And, you know, because your phone just, as an example on your phone, it's contextually aware. As an example on your car, it just kind of gets you there. You know, you really only notice it when it doesn't work.
Right.
And so maybe in that regard, and I guess the weird part about the previous ones that he mentioned, they're all super obvious. Like you knew when you were using a personal computer, you knew when you were surfing the web, and you know it when you're on your phone right now. You may not know it when you're using artificial intelligence. Like they just talked about now, during the event, they flipped the switch on some translation thing from English to Chinese, and they were talking about how they've done magnitude steps better of translating by using machine learning. And like, yeah, we actually flipped the switch on this a couple weeks ago. You maybe didn't even notice. I'm like, I definitely did not notice because I haven't translated anything into Chinese lately. And, but it's one of those where it's like, you just don't know. But
I don't know. I might disagree with that a little bit. I'd give them a little more credit in the idea that, yeah, you're right. Your iPhone or your computer was a big thing. And like, oh, I'm using the internet, definitely using the internet right now. But at the same time, there's a tremendous amount of education and branding that went along with that. And like you said, I mean, honestly, we use the internet all the time nowadays as this like general catchphrase for a whole host of technologies. But for the most part, we don't even think about it. Like it is.
Your mobile phone is really an internet device. I mean, come on.
Right. And we only really care about the internet when these different services break, when the app doesn't run right because I'm not connected to the internet. What do you mean? Like, why am I not connected to the internet? Why is my build? We're only aware of the internet because it costs so much and it occasionally doesn't work and interrupts these services. It should be this invisible pipeline in the background, but we're educated about it. We're branded for it. It costs a lot and it breaks occasionally. And those are things that I think AI will be susceptible to as well.
I want to look at it another way, but I also don't want to concede the point. So
fair enough.
What about from a, and I kind of said it and I'm going to say it more explicitly, like what about it's usually led by hardware, not by software. And is the new capabilities of artificial intelligence something that's because of a new hardware thing as opposed to, we just got more of a computer.
That's fascinating because I was going to make two comments. One of those related to that.
Cool.
And I'll say this. So I've talked about this on the show before quite a few times over the years. And it's really cool when people like Elon Musk clearly listen to the podcast and echo it in his landmark speeches about going to Mars. But this,
yeah, he is a listener. If you want to be cool like Elon Musk, you should listen to, which
exactly
you have to be at the moment. So there you go. You're cool like Elon.
yeah, you're listening. Thank you. But this idea that technology doesn't
ad campaign idea. Asterisk. We don't actually know.
Yeah, we just assume. But this idea that technology doesn't just happen. In retrospect, sometimes it feels inevitable, but it is because people, large groups of engineers, work towards a goal that somebody set for them. Smartphones exist the way they are, not because it's the inevitable form factor. They exist the way they are is because Steve Jobs said, you know, I think we should have a big piece of glass that can fit in your pocket that you can touch. And people really liked it. People bought it. So other companies jumped in on it, reinforcing that paradigm, building up user experience and just general populist understanding and other in standards. And so it feels inevitable, even though it's not necessarily. The fact that Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft all are working on this goal at the same time in the same direction means that same sort of reinforcing is going to happen. And I do agree with him that in a decade, we'll look back and think, well, that seemed inevitable when it wasn't by any means. If everybody had decided to go to Mars instead, that would have felt inevitable. But and then the other piece of it is, yeah, I do think hardware is changing. I think as we get to the end of Moore's Law in a more traditional sense, a lot of these companies, I really do believe that their big thing next is going to be moving from what was the model of silicon manufacturing, the model of computation for decades was more transistors in the same size space. And so more transistors, which allowed you to build better and better CPUs. We've now gotten to the point where CPUs are good enough. We don't want discrete components. We want everything on the same die. And you're starting to have more and more fabless manufacturers, more and more companies that design their own silicon and then have it manufactured somewhere else. The customization, customizability of silicon, what we were talking about last week with Microsoft's servers full of GPIO and field programmable gate arrays, FPGAs, and the ability to build these really fast changing logic systems that really give a lot of horsepower to artificial intelligence. Looking at what NVIDIA is doing, where they've completely pivoted to silicon specifically designed for machine learning, for a hardware accelerated, the type of hardware acceleration you can do with silicon today is fundamentally different than what you could do 10 years ago. And that hardware change is facilitating a computational change specifically in the direction of machine learning, neural networks, and smarter computers. So yeah, that all happens away from us. That all happens on a server somewhere, but it's clearly, it's not just new software. It's not just more transistors. It's how we configure the transistors on a chip. In a similar way that the system on a chip allowed Apple to build the first iPhone and really shocked both Palm and BlackBerry, because they didn't understand how you could have that entire device in that small of a form factor until they opened it up and realized it was a giant battery with a tiny system on a chip. That was a big shift in computation that allowed Apple to do something that their competitors couldn't. Facilitated by a change in how silicon's manufactured. I think there's validity to it.
Interesting. I tend to think of it more. Well, let me ask my question first, and then I'll make my statement. Oftentimes, you're thought in terms of platforms. You have this thing that enables a whole bunch of other things to shoot off of it. So, with computers, internet, mobile, you can make apps from it, essentially, right? Programs, websites, and almost anyone can do it. And it enables this whole new economy and wave of creativity. Like, how does that work with artificial intelligence? I mean, I know that they've got their triggers and commands or whatever they're calling them. But is that going to be a similar thing?
I think so. I think it'll be even more dramatic. You know, we'll go back to the iPhone and the modern age of smartphones. Original iPhone, Palm, BlackBerry, your nascent smartphone market were closed platforms. No app ecosystem. One of the things that really allowed Apple...
There were apps on the original iPhone. They were just all made by Apple.
Right. But, when we're talking about it as a widespread platform that allows you to create all sorts of new things, like...
But it was just... developers were instantly like, dude, where's the app store? I want to make an app for this. And, that was an obvious next step for them to take. And I think we all knew they were good. They thought they were just going to do it all through Safari. I get that.
That's a good point. Okay, you know what? There's validity here because we are in a way that wasn't true with the App Store, wasn't true with apps on smartphones, where there was this real clear, people immediately wanted to know how to do it, wanted access to the SDKs, wanted access to the APIs, wanted to build on that platform. I think building on an AI platform is way more difficult for general developers, people that don't have masters and master's degrees right now. That being said, what's it called? That one company, Udacity, has announced an AI program, like specifically teaching people how to do it. I guess
how to make their own IA or how to use Google's.
Yes, how to use like TensorFlow, how to use these tools that Google is building and to extend them into their own platform.
Because to me, in a way, AI seems like a feature that is used in your phone on the internet as a part of an app you might have on another platform. But in and of itself is not a standalone thing.
So I think what people really want them to be eventually, I think this is what these companies want them to become, is are not a standalone an endpoint feature, but an API. So for people who listen that don't really know, an API is a artificial programming interface. No, it's how can I not remember what API stands for?
Automatic participatory information.
Application programming interface. Oh, jeez. Yeah. I can't believe I forgot that. Pretty so basically that. what it is, is if you want to, for example, request, if you have an application and you want to request an internet web page, information from the internet, like you don't want it to build all, you don't have to write all the software to do that. You want one line of code where you tell it what web address to go to, and it just gives you all the information that your application then can do something with it. And they call that an API. Anything that allows you to do that is called an API. And so that's what Google wants. They want you to use their machine vision, their ability to see the world in your platform, and they're going to build their own end user technology to showcase what it's capable of. Like Apple's built-in apps. We'll right. show you what the end user can do with it. We'll set the guidelines for how it should work. Your design guidelines, but y'all can build your own tools using our APIs, using our internal software. Microsoft, that's how they describe their paradigm. And especially because we've talked about this before, that there's this three different types of artificial intelligence. There's artificial narrow intelligence, which is what we currently have. They're intelligent, but at a very, very narrow subset of things, identifying facial features, figuring out who people are, understanding language. There's artificial general intelligences, which sometimes are described as human level AI. Basically, it's like a person. It's on that level. And then there's the artificial superintelligence, which is what Elon Musk is afraid of, which are they're smarter than us, they're better than us, we can't control them, and they're terrifyingly powerful. Yeah. So artificial narrow intelligence make a lot of sense as part of a larger platform. Google, I think, sits there and says, you know, what is Google search without the rest of the internet? That's the platform that they want to build. That's the sort of tool that they want to have, is the next Google search, for lack of a better, you know.
Yeah, which I would not say is generation of computing, but yeah.
Well, but they think of themselves as an internet company. They think of themselves as the internet age, the 95 to 2005 era.
Yeah, see, the internet, they're built on the internet. Google itself is not the internet. And I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah, but yeah. Okay. You know what? I see what you're saying. I don't know. I think it's going to be huge, and it's going to be pretty I feel like in retrospect, it'll seem obvious. In looking forward, it is hard to tell exactly how this is going to work. But I think that AI and bots are going to have just a ton of...
Well, I'm putting my money on VR. We're going to look back in mid-2010s and go... VR was it?
Well, it sounds to me like a Google agrees.
Yeah, well, they're hedging their bets. Let's put it that way, despite the strong stuff. But before we get to VR, let's talk about some of the other stuff they did. So they came out with the Pixel phone.
Whoa.
The Pixel and a Pixel XL, which is a 5-inch and a 5.5-inch. Let's see. It's pure Android, made by Google. And though it seems like HTC helped a lot with the making of said thing, it includes a lot of Google Assistant, which is one of the ways in which they're using their AI. So there's kind of some cool things with that. Like one of the things they showed was that it can be aware of what's on your screen. So I'm guessing you could have a picture of something up and you could say, hey, Google, or okay, Google, what is that? and it would just tell you, according to the machine, what it is. And it's aware of it. So that's kind of cool. It's built into, obviously built into the photos. There's actually one really cool feature that it can do that I'm just like, I want to do that. it can remember things for you. And so you could be like, hey, Google, remember that my bike lock combo is XYZ. And then later on, you could say, what's my bike lock combo? And it would know it. I'm just like, oh, that actually sounds kind of awesome.
It does actually sound pretty good. That. Come on, Siri, get your act together.
I know. I'm just like, oh, that seems so simple. But anyways, if you do it with Siri, it takes you to the Reminders app. I'll set you a reminder for that. I'm like,
it's different.
Close, but not what I wanted. So it's got that. Let's see here. They're $27 a month or $650. And so they're not cheap. And their camera is apparently better than the iPhone 7 camera.
Best camera ever.
The iPhone 7 camera was ranked by a single independent company at like an 86 out of 100. And their camera was ranked or scored an 89. So they're going with the highest and best test score.
Interesting.
Which is fair. And I thought this was their three colors. It's like simple silver, very blue, and just black or something like that.
Yeah.
Totally making fun of Apple's names on that.
Oh, no.
And you could tell and you could hear them like, it's funny. Like Apple has like, they've always made fun of other companies and it's just kind of, it's what they do. And it's, they do it less, but they still definitely very much do it. And so you just, whatever, it is what it is. But it's like with Google, you almost am like, guys, I thought you were above this.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
What's with the comment? I mean, I get it. I get what they're doing. But there's a part of me that's like, they make offhanded comments of like the camera, like the camera itself. They're like, yeah, it doesn't stick out either. And she's like,
right. Well, I think, you know what I think they were doing? Honestly, I think they were doing good marketing in that they are forcing us to compare them to the iPhone. We are inherently putting them in the same league.
Oh,
we're drawing comparison and they want that. They want to be a super high end phone and they are purposefully drawing your attention to the iPhone every time because
instead of like Motorola's.
Yeah, exactly. Don't
they used to own. Compare with
Samsung. Exactly. Don't compare yourself with Samsung. Don't compare yourself with Nexus. Compare yourself with iPhone because they're sitting there thinking, look, we want people to think of us as an iPhone alternative. And not because we'll become a worldwide bestseller year one, but because it just sets us at that scale. You know, it gives it the name change and everything because it's just a Nexus phone. I mean, what's the difference between a Nexus phone and this? Other than actually, this is kind of interesting, sort of from Huawei was the company that manufactured all the Nexus's phones. And as you mentioned, HTC is building these. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Google wanted to get rid of the branding that wasn't theirs. They wanted to get rid of the Huawei branding on the Nexus phones. And Huawei was like, no, we want our branding on it too. And so HTC was willing to just be a nameless manufacturer in it, giving Google more control over the image of the device. From a software perspective, there's other cool stuff going on.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, you get unlimited photo and video backup through Google Photos.
Full quality, 4K video, unlimited.
That's intense.
That's pretty nice. Yeah.
It's pretty intense. So there's that. They'll support Daydream VR, which we'll talk about in a little bit. It looks cool. It genuinely looks like an awesome phone. The hands-on reviews I've heard, they say they've like, it's genuinely good. It feels good. The back finger sensor, like that seems to not be fully thought through yet. but they're like, maybe it'll be okay by the time it actually comes out. Though you could pre-order already if you wanted to. Thought that was interesting. They're like, pre-order today. And it's funny. Like I when Apple did their thing on, was it a Wednesday? And they were like, pre-order on Friday. Even I was like, whoa, that's not a lot of time for me to process and decide.
Right.
And then they were like, pre-order today. And I'm like, and my thought was just like, wow, you have to have already been committed, but maybe they're not worried about delays. I don't know. I have no idea what their demand's going to be. They'll probably tell us if it's amazing.
I'm going to say they have no idea what their demand's going to be.
Yeah, totally true. It's only with Verizon. That's it.
Kind of. You can buy it through Google and get support from any company, including T-Mobile and Sprint and everybody. But you have to – you the only carrier you can buy it through on contract is Verizon.
Oh. Okay.
Which
all right.
It's fine, I guess.
Okay. It does come with a Google Assistant, which is part of their AI thing now. We've talked about it. We've talked about their Allo. Is that the one? Duo? Their Allo app. It's okay. I mean, that's the weird part about it, where it's like they talk about all the really awesome things that the AI is going to do. And you're still like, it reminds me of when Apple like first released the Mac, and like, this is going to change the world. As long as you only want to run one app at a time.
Right. And yeah.
You're just kind of like, all right, we're just getting started.
This very much feels like a first pass at this. One of the interesting things to me is that this is a really expensive phone. Like, this is iPhone expensive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, you mean just relative to other Android devices?
Android, yeah. Like, it's a expensive. I know, but you're an Apple fanboy.
It's true.
For people who are big Nexus fans, this is really disappointing. They were hoping for something in the $400 price range. And when it starts at 650 and goes up for there, if you want a bigger phone or more storage, it doesn't come with a SIM card like a lot of Android phones. It's because they're all like, nah, the internet's the deal. You want to back everything up in the cloud. So you don't need anything extra. Which, you know, that's pretty cool. One of the things that's interesting is this argument of like, is it too expensive? Why is it so expensive? And there's a pretty good article from ZDNet that talks about the idea of R&D and creating your own custom components. Because a lot of these different – one of the struggles that Android manufacturers have had is that they're buying off-the-shelf components from different companies and then packaging it together in their own package. They don't design their own batteries. They don't design their own cameras. They don't design their own screens. They don't design their own processors. And so there's kind of a musical chairs effect going on. Who can come up with the best pricing for the best arrangement of chips that everybody has available to them, which has given you this sort of muddled, they're all the same feeling. So for Google to stand out at all in their device, they have to have custom components, which is how Apple is able to stand out in a lot of ways. So they decided to design their own camera. And that is the first time you design your own component like that. It's really expensive. It's just, it gets crazy. And you know, obviously it's a really good camera. So, you know, it's funny. I've read some articles that are like, it's not like it's better than the Samsung Galaxy cameras or the iPhone cameras. It's maybe as good. And I'm like, yeah, but those cameras are great. So it's probably good enough that the fact that it is in the same league as an iPhone camera or a Samsung camera is pretty good news, even if it...
Yeah, because usually the biggest slam against Android devices. There's like the camera.
Right.
The camera's not very good.
And not
just...
I've
seen some of them. I agree.
I know. Well, yeah, and it's not just it's not just from a spec perspective. They're saying, no. When you actually compare picture to picture in difficult lighting situations, this phone performs really, really well. Which is
the examples they gave looked really good. Like one of the things I like is they automatically, it's just like the HDR feature, like it's just on and it all happens at once. And we take multiple photos and we stitch them together pixel by pixel to do whichever the best one is. And they showed a bunch of examples, and I was like, wow, man, that generally does look very good. I like it.
Yeah.
And it's got some image stabilization in there for the video. And
it's got some digital image stabilization,
yes,
which is one of the criticisms, because digital is not as good as mechanical. But
fair enough, fair enough. They showed one example of it, and it looked, you know, on the big screen.
Right.
Me on the little screen watching it on their big screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Looked fine.
I'm sure it's really good. I mean, if you think about it, Google has been doing image stabilization, automatic image stabilization for you uploaded YouTube videos for a long time.
Yes,
I mean,
that's true.
They are great at that particular software. Like, if any company were to come up with a good software solution to that problem, Google is going to be the best, because they've been working on it the longest. So I think they can get a pass on that, where Apple wouldn't be able to. Apple does get a pass because their iPhone 7s don't have mechanical stabilization, but, and I, not that,
they,
whereas the 7 Plus is, the Plus is.
No, both of them do.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. I should pay attention.
The only difference between the 7 and the Plus is the Plus is 2.
So that being said, the Apple Insider, I thought, did have a pretty good comparison chart, because Google went way out of their way to be like, look, our device is as good as the iPhone device.
Yes.
And they went through things like the type of flash that it has, the quality of the cameras, the quality of the LCD screen, the chip type, how powerful the chip was, how much RAM it had, how much storage it has. And it really is beat for beat as good or better than the iPhone. And then, of course, the first thing people do is actually do like real world bench testing of the performance. And the 7, 7 Plus double the pixels. I mean, it just maul them. But, you know, 7s are some of the best phones. They're the most powerful phone. The software hardware combination is as good as it can be, and that's just, everybody agrees on that. So the real question is, how does it compare to the 6s and 6s Plus? And this is where it gets disconcerting, because they're not even really close to the 6s Plus benchmark. They're way behind the iPads. I mean, it's
what
just
benchmarks are we talking about here?
This is Geekbench, the one that I'm looking at in particular.
Okay. All
right. I'm looking at single core, multi core stuff. And one of the problems that people have is that the Pixels don't have enough RAM. Even though they have more RAM than the iPhones, they don't do as well. They need more RAM. They have less RAM than comparable phones like the Samsung Galaxy S7. Exactly. They're not as so. There's also missing features like wide colored display. The whole HDR thing on the iPhone, the 7 and 7 Plus.
New, isn't it?
Yeah, but Samsung's got it and Apple's got it. And
I heard one, he was like, Apple, it's not waterproof. I was like, wow. Well, boy, we hedonic adaptation is fast.
See, the problem is that. Apple just got on that bandwagon, but every other Android manufacturer's been on it for a while with your super high-end phones. So the fact that even latecomer Apple has it, and you guys skipped that feature.
Interesting.
3D touch and the haptic feedback, I don't know how important those are, but I think they're – at least the haptic feedback stuff and the more dynamic –
it's kind of nice.
It is nice, and it's becoming more important. I don't think that's a huge deal. Is it like missing stereo speakers? Like, really? It's got
a headphone jack.
Exactly. We'll leave that one. We'll say that, you know, that's a wash in the balance. And then, but one of the big criticisms, and I think there's validity to this, is that every Google phone is forgotten after it flops. Google has a real history of not supporting these phones for a long time, and they have a chance to prove it, because They've got all these Nexus phones all out there. Are they going to keep pushing the innovation on those Nexus phones and keep them around as like as usable phones for another 2 or 3 years? Or are they just going to be like, no, that's Huawei's problem now. Just go to your, you know, you're not cutting edge anymore. Whereas Apple does a good job of keeping their phones feature full.
You heard me say that at the beginning of the podcast for my computer, right?
Right.
Turns out it's supported. I was surprised. Yeah.
and those are really big questions for Google. So to me, I look at it and say, it's their first pass. I'm going to give them, I think, compared to Amazon's first pass with the Fire Phone, which I said they should stick it out with because I think they've got potential on it, and I think that Amazon can make it happen. I think Google's step with the Pixel phones are 100 times better. But it's also unfair to act like this is their first phone, because it's not. It's just the first phone that they've made with this name. It's actually like the sixth year that they've been making phones. As you pointed out, they owned Motorola at one point. They've developed a bunch of Nexus tablets and phones. This isn't their first rodeo. You know, you got to outperform Samsung. One of the features that they're also missing are exploding batteries.
that is true. That is true. I heard on your flight, you had a slight announcement about that.
Yeah, this is pretty. And this is what was amazing because I'm sitting there next to my girlfriend and the phone, the announcer comes on and she's like, if you have a Samsung if you have a Samsung Galaxy 7, please don't have it on. Keep it off. Don't power it up on the flight.
Which I told you about that on my flight. And you were like, no way.
Yeah. Well, it's like, and my girlfriend leans into me and says, whispers note. Was like, they told, yeah, that. The difference there is that the Galaxy S7s aren't exploding. The Galaxy 7 isn't a phone that doesn't, that's not a name for anything. The Galaxy Note 7 is exploding in spectacular fashion.
How do they not confiscate them like they do my peanut butter?
I honestly
bombs.
Like, I honestly don't know.
Help me out here.
You know what it is?
Just shows you the whole thing's a sham.
Well, it is security theater. But B, there's a big difference between the Samsung lobby and the peanut butter lobby. That's huge. And because it's like it is one of the world's biggest companies, and you're talking about taking their flagship phone off the market, which, by the way, I do want to give us a brief update because this is fascinating. It's amazing to watch in real time. As of this evening, Samsung has halted production of the Note 7s. You cannot buy them at AT&T. You cannot buy them at T-Mobile. The replacement ones obviously the original ones. I mean, they are in full-on disaster because they had four replacement phones explode this week.
I heard it was five.
Wasn't it more up to five? And the worst part was, like, everybody heard about the first one that popped this week was the one on the Southwest flight that exploded. Well, you know, they had to like bring everybody off the plane.
Are you kidding me?
I know. And the guy claims it was off. It was powered off. It wasn't charging. Just started smoking in his pocket.
Yeah, right.
I know. Well, it's bad enough that it explodes. Whose fault it is? Samsung. Your phone shouldn't explode.
No, it's the fault of the TSA for allowing those things on airplanes and endangering lives.
It's true. You're absolutely right. But turns out that wasn't the first one this week. There was another one that exploded on Tuesday, the day before, and Samsung, not only were they not going to tell anybody until like later in the week, they were keeping it quiet, but they accidentally texted the dude saying specifically, hey, should I like make things difficult on this guy and, you know, and keep him from
This is amazing. No way.
So he also says that he thought Samsung was willing to work with him to get the matter resolved until a Samsung representative accidentally texted him. Just got this. I can try and slow him down if we think it will matter, or we just let him do what he keeps threatening to do and see if he does it. Basically, the rep read the text from him, thought he was texting like his boss or his coworker or whatever, and accidentally texted the person that he was that the phone had just exploded on. Yeah.
Oops.
This is a PR disaster of epic proportions. People, they're not saying
they
the phone rights.
They'd be so happy with the current political climate right now.
I know.
They have got, wow.
Yeah, because people are only, the problem is people are only dimly aware of the fact that Samsung phones explode. And that sentence right there, phones explode, is a huge problem.
Yeah, you would almost want everyone to be very specific about which one, like you said, in the
right.
From the plane. Oh my gosh, that is so bad.
I know. Poor Samsung. It's unbelievable. I know. It's great news for Google, though, because that was the echelon of phone that they wanted to compare themselves with, was the Galaxy Note 7 and the iPhone 7. They wanted to be one of those three competing devices. And so, you know, iPhones don't have a headphone jack. Samsung phones are waterproof, but not fireproof. Google's fine being, I know. It just, yeah, pretty amazing.
Wow. Obviously Samsung will weather it just because they're a huge company.
And they're financially, they're doing fine. They just announced their financials for this quarter and everything was good. We will see how next quarter looks because these phones have only been exploding for a couple of weeks now.
I remember when HP, because of the tsunami and then the hard drive issue, like wasn't able to ship cartridges for a while. Now, granted, cartridges are profitable. And our next couple quarters, we were like, oh man, sorry.
Yeah.
But everyone knows it's coming. My guess is their stock price, they have one, is already adjusting downward at a rapid pace.
Samsung is going to be fine as a company. Even their mobile department will be okay. Like, because they're still the number one Android seller in the world by a huge margin. Like, this is not the end of Samsung at all. The only thing this does is it gives, like, it had to be a perfect storm of circumstances for a company like Google to come in and be like, oh, by the way, you should buy our phone instead of a Samsung phone. And I think you'll only see the consequences of this over the course of a couple of years. They gave Google a foothold at the right possible moment. And if Google can stay the course and build some momentum, that could have an appreciable impact on Samsung in the next year.
They've been hitting the marketing hard. I
know.
I've been out a couple of times since the announcement and I've seen multiple commercials from Google. So I'm like, all right, they're on it. And
yeah.
Wow.
It's just the right thing to do.
Samsung.
I mean, it's, I know. A big part of Apple's success has been a really effective marketing campaign.
Unreal.
And, yeah.
I'm an Apple fanboy, so I don't feel bad, but I feel for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst. You're just like, oh. Oh, that's bad. All right. Okay. So back to the made by Google. So the phone wasn't the only thing that they announced.
All right.
Surprisingly.
What else did they announce?
They're coming to your home.
Ooh.
So they announced Alexa. I mean, Google Home.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're, which we talked about that before. And they kind of pre-announced it at I/O earlier this year. And so it's like the Amazon Echo. It's a little speaker, sits in whatever room you want. It's listening. It connects to that brand new platform for the decade of artificial intelligence. So you can ask it all sorts of questions, which is genuinely cool, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
It's like the fact that it's connected to the knowledge graph and then like top sites around it. Like they gave some examples where they would say like, okay, Google, how do I clean up the stain from my carpet? And it was like, here's from such and such a source. And then kind of gave a step-by-step, like get a tablespoon of this and a teaspoon of that and rub it in and blot it out. And then just and kind of walked him through the steps.
I really want to try this thing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you're in luck because...
What?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we pre-ordered one, actually.
What?
And it's coming to your house. So
that's awesome.
You will actually get to try it. And then the plan is to give it away afterwards. Yeah. So
we're going to give it away, too.
It launches November 4th, and so we'll get it after that. We'll check it out. So by Thanksgiving, to under promise, we'll give it away. And yeah, so we're going to do another giveaway type of thing. So we'll give you a lot more details, but essentially it'll be give us your email address, tell some friends about it to get more votes into the pot. And the goal is to gain users who like Google and technology. And so, yeah, we're going to do that. So, yeah, you will get to play with it. You'll get to decide for yourself how well it actually works. And you don't own an Echo, so you can't do a side-by-side comparison. Maybe you have a friend who does who'd let you borrow it for a day so you could do some head-on comparisons. But, man, some of those things they can do genuinely sounds pretty cool. I hear from, pre-stuff that I've read about it, they're all like, yeah, the speaker's okay. it's not mind-blowing. But you can connect it to an audio system. And so, that's a cool thing. So they announced a new Chromecast as well, Chromecast Ooh. Ultra. But what they have is their Chromecast Audio or AudioCast or something to that
effect. Yeah, those are cool.
And so... those talk to Google Home. So you can have one of those guys connected to your sound system in your home. And then you could tell Google, hey, play this Spotify playlist on my... And you can actually set up a default for when you tell it to play music, where you want it to play, and what music store or system you'd want it to use, whether it's like Google Play or Spotify or Pandora. And so you could say, hey, play some show tunes, and it can automatically start playing on your home stereo system, not necessarily through your Google Home. And so some cool integration in that regard. Definitely a place where, again, highly biased, I'm bought into the Apple ecosystem. I'm all trying to Siri things up and make my home super smart. And looking at this going, that's kind of cool. Connects to a Chromecast, so it can connect to your TV and connect to your stereo system and probably someday connect to your lights and and other things. So I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I think a lot of the stuff I bought will work with both just because of the nature of it, because they'll want to, which is another reason. Because I'm kind of like... I don't know. I could totally see where it would make sense to have like an Echo and a Google Home in the house with you. You know, like to have them both. I feel like they're complementary in a way, just because, or maybe like a future Apple thing or like an Apple TV and a Google Home. I don't know. I'm just like, I'm thinking about like for myself, I use Gmail, I use Google Calendar, I use Google Contacts. Like, so that's how I connect with people. It's all Google. I do my searching through Google, like they're the best. And I can totally see how it would just be a good system to have that complements other stuff, you know? And you would just have to know, like, Siri turns off my lights, but Google answers my questions.
I still think that Amazon long term, I think Google's going to have to pivot a little bit. How they pivot
really
exactly will be interesting. As I still think Amazon's big advantage and the reason why they are doing as well as they're doing, and we talked about this when Alexa first started to really take off, is just the third party integration. And it's
so that's interesting, actually. So Google talked about that. And so one of the way that Alexa works is you have to like train a service or bring it online and you have to enable it. And with theirs, like, no, it's just everything will work. If you want to order an Uber, you don't have to enable it to do it. Just order it. It will be there.
Okay.
And so they're kind of like so I, you know, obviously they just got started, so they don't have the numbers yet. But if they put their might behind it, they'll just say, "Yeah, just ask for it; it'll do it."
That's what I mean, and it, where I think you'll get a lot of advantages is when, or I don't know. I think the direction that people are going to want it to go, it's going to be the thing where you can just be like, "Hey, turn off my lights." And one or more of your AIs will just be like, okay, I got this, you know, like
yeah.
a series of servants that all work in concert, like you said. And I don't know. I don't know exactly how this looks in the long run, but the advantage of AI is that it's easier to do it from a developer perspective, because part of it, you can just, like you said, like they the whole idea is that they learn, they figure out how to do this on their own. And ideally long term,
yeah, I think this is so interesting. Concepts, I mean, Google's so good about, and Apple too, but I think for whatever reason, I'm more impressed when Google does it, where it's like, they think about things of like, you should be able to set your default player. And just have that be assumed. And I know they've got a lot of practice with that, with like, you have to choose your default browser and stuff like that. But you also get that sense of like, yeah, Amazon hasn't gotten that far yet. They've probably, someone has mused about it, but Google's been like, no, this is important. We want this.
Right. That's here. Definitely fair. I think is that compared to the Google has more of a sense of what's important to have just baked in. Whereas in a similar way to have where, like, I remember, we don't even think about this anymore. Well, you can't think about it anymore because you don't have a headphone jack. But the idea that Apple has multiple sound profiles that are saved depending on what it's connected to.
That's
your headphone jack is different than your Bluetooth jack is different than, and it intelligently figures out, okay, what should my sound level be at? And like the whole, when you unplug your headphone, the sound would turn off. Little things like that Apple did early on really differentiated their device, especially their music devices, compared to other platforms. And when a platform is getting started, it's those little nuances that can make huge differences to the success of the platform over time. Because is it intuitive? You know, there's a lot of people who, you know, the early adopters. Early adopters tend to have the tenacity to figure it out and learn how to make it work, but there's no money in that. You totally. You want the mid adopters, you want the late adopters. And when those are intuitive and easy to use and quote unquote, just work, that's where there's real money and real advantage. And long term, you don't worry about whether or not it's fully featured and it does everything, because you're like, no, what it does a few things really well and intuitively. And if Google can nail that, it'll make up for a lot of ground.
So like my door opens automatically when your phone just walks by it.
Exactly.
Phones. Jesse didn't turn on that app right away.
So
she stopped working. And she was just like, we need to turn this back on somehow. Like, get this to work again. I'm like, open the app and sign in. It's pretty easy.
I know.
And she's like, oh, that's it? I'm like, yeah. And it totally was. But that's the point you want to get it to, where I'm pretty certain I can get rid of her house key. I mean, I don't even have a house key anymore. I don't have a house key. I don't even have one like sitting somewhere. We were given one, and I was like, well, we're keeping
that's
it.
That's good enough.
That. And, and I don't think she even knows where hers is, to be honest. And I'm like, but that's where you want to get it to. It's that idea of it's convenient enough. And that one genuinely is, where she's like, oh, I'm good. I'll use it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Hasn't quite gotten there with the light stuff yet. Or the thermostat, but you don't really set the thermostat. That's kind of like you do it once and then it just kind of does its thing.
Right. But if every time you think of something to try to challenge Google Home with, it successfully does it, that is huge for the platform. And
that was this one guy was, it was pretty funny. He was talking, it was more about the artificial intelligence stuff, but he's like, but you can use it either on the phone or on home. And he was like, you can tell it to remind, to do like essentially the equivalent of a Google Alerts for anything. And so he said, I'm going to try to remember if I can get this right, but he was like, he said, I want you to like every day at 7 a.m. Tell me what the height of Steven Seagal is. Okay. And he goes, so for the last couple of days, 7 a.m., it does a quick Google search to tell me what his height is, which so far has been the same, hasn't changed. And so he's like, I think that just goes to show it'll do anything. But pretty funny, the types of things that it'll do. And that's, man, I mean, that's their thing, right? It's like either the knowledge graph has it, or they're going to find a site that they know is a trusted site that they think can give it to you with proper attribution. They were quick to say that, which is,
you know what, that's, you know, it's funny. I never even thought about that, but that's an interesting thing. Cause it's like,
So like, for example, you can actually say good morning to it and it'll rattle off a bunch of information like your weather, what's next on your agenda. Just your overall schedule if you wanted.
Who are the Giants playing tonight?
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully the Cubbies and winning, exactly. Not losing again.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. It's cool. I like the home automation stuff, in case you didn't know that.
Well, it's cool, and it's definitely very cool.
I think one of the things I like about them is I feel like these ecosystems can coexist.
Yeah.
Which I think that is also exciting to me, because I feel like I'm only going to carry around one phone. I'm like, I'm pretty certain that's true. And yeah. So you kind of very quickly become wedded to one. Now, there are certain things where it's like, you can tell Google Home one thing and then it'll recall it on any other device.
That's
so like
cool.
That bike lock example, you tell it in one place, it'll remember it on your phone. And things like that. I'm like, okay, that's neat, which is a lot of the continuity type of things that Apple's working on. And so I get that, and that's pretty sweet. I also feel like this is obviously going to help out Alexa or the Echo and whatever Apple eventually comes out with. But
yeah, see, what I would really like is I'd really like this.
This is the next big computing platform.
I want this integrated into any app, into on any platform. And I think this is the challenge. And I think this is the reason why Google is developing these pieces of hardware. Because it's like you brought up Gmail and calendars and stuff and how you use those as your cloud information. And I do the exact same. And the reason why I do it is because it's so easy to transport that from platform to platform to device to device. It just works anywhere on everything. It would be really great if these different AIs were ephemeral in that they work on all devices the same. I want to be able to tell my Google Home, hey, remember my dog's name, and then go to my iPhone and say, hey, Google, what's my dog's name again? And it would answer that question because it's fully integrated. Now, the problem is obviously Amazon protects the Echo, Apple protects the iPhone, and Google is having a hard time. You know, this is Google basically saying, we're not going to be able to get this on the other other pieces of hardware, so we'll just build the hardware. Their ability to weasel into other platforms, I think, will give them, will determine how well they win. But if anybody can do it, it's Google, I think. Yeah. I don't think Siri is going to have as much success on other platforms as Google will have on.
We'll have zero, but. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they won't even try. And it sets our expectations.
I'd even be okay with somehow you have some sort of stored repository and you're just accessing that information with whatever assistant is on tap at the moment. But
what I really want is, yeah. Are they launching like a web version of this where you can just open up an app on your computer or something?
Well, download Allo. That's essentially it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. We've mentioned it a couple times, Chromecast Ultra. It's 4K. It's Chromecast with 4K. $70.
It's twice the computing power, James.
It's 4K.
I know.
So there's that. Actually,
what does that even mean on a device that all it does is stream content from other devices, that it's twice as fast? I don't understand that, but why would you care? Does it stream it effectively or not? That's fine. Okay, good. Why would you mention what its CPU abilities are? But anyways.
Second to last
that's
thing.
That's besides the point.
Was Google Wi-Fi. So they released a router. Now, what's cool about this is that they can create a... You can get more than one, and it will create a mesh network, essentially.
Yeah.
And so if you have a large house, you can get more than one. You can buy, like, one device is $129. Or you can get three-pack for $300 to cover all parts of your house.
Now, I totally
don't
get
know the
why
size.
This...
Like, how... Like, what...
Like a puck. They're not very big at all.
I think this would be awesome for my apartment building, but for my house, I'm like, I think just one would work. I just want to know, like, what's the area it covers.
Oh, I see. That's you know what I don't get about it out. is why. what's in this for Google? How does this serve the rest of the platform?
Your internet, man. Connectivity. Is that how do you know? They probably just don't want to say anything. Just better connectivity, right?
I guess that's the best that I can come up with is that that's the reason why you would do this because.
The other cool thing that I do like about it is it gives you, it has a companion app that allows you to control your internet a lot more. So it will automatically figure out like if you're doing a video conference, it'll give that priority. Somehow it figures it out. And then you can also, you obviously register devices. And they're like, so if it's time for dinner and you want your kids off the phone, you log into the app and you tap their names to disconnect the internet from their phone.
And then they switch over to LTE and drag down your data plan.
Yeah, exactly. But mesh network, that's the big thing. It looks cool too.
I guess it kind of makes sense. Yeah, Apple has hardware like this. It just seems like a... Everything else seems so pointed in its purpose. We're doing this because it gives us access.
Well, I've
got to imagine
if you've got the Google Home thing coming out, they want to make sure it's got good connections everywhere.
I guess that makes sense. I guess that's the same argument of the Chromecast.
And if you're living in a house that's 2,700 square feet, like that's an issue.
Mm. And Apple hasn't updated their routers in a long time, and there's space for it. Okay, I'm coming back around. It's fine.
It's fine. It's expensive, but it's fine.
It's expensive. If you want a really solid internet connection, it seems like the sort of thing that they built for themselves. They were annoyed that nobody else had something as amazing as they wanted.
There are some out there, but yeah, maybe just not as good as what they want.
Right. So they built it for themselves, which is the right thing to do. Honestly, that's one of the best reasons to do something like that. To say, look, this can be better, and we want it, so we're going to do it. But what's the last thing, James? I'm really curious about what
that is. That's virtually it.
Oh.
In reality, I don't think there is really much more.
Ah, this is exciting.
It's that time of the show.
I know. Guess what it's time for? Your weekly update.
So, is this a dream?
You know what we didn't do last week? I actually thought about it after the show. It was the first week in like months that we didn't talk about VR at all.
How'd it feel?
Weird.
Did you get the shakes?
I don't like it.
Well, we're going to make up for it right now.
Well, especially for the next 2 weeks, because PlayStation VR comes out on Thursday. And
yeah.
Google.
We'll start with Google. So they gave a Daydream update.
Ah, yeah.
For their VR stuff. And they announced a headset. It's a colored fabric.
Well, you can say it's not a headset so much as it's a phone case holder that's
attached
to your head.
Goes with the Pixel or any Daydream approved phone, which for now is just the Pixel.
Yeah.
And it's $80. And it looks awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
The design is, it looks sweet. It looks as comfortable as what they said. So they were talking about, like, a bunch of them are just these plastic boxes on your head and they don't look comfortable at all. Ours are light and comfy. And you look at it and go, you know what? I totally believe them.
Yeah,
it does actually look nice. And then they showed some demos of different things that you can do. Like, there's a Harry Potter game. Well, it comes with a remote too, which I thought was interesting.
Well, they announced that it was going to have that remote when they announced Daydream.
I know. I just seen demos of it. I'm still just like, interesting. But anyways, there was a Harry Potter game. You're going around the world with a wand looking for creatures. Looked awesome.
Where to find them.
Yeah, exactly. They showed a couple other gamey type of things. I'm waiting for the Ghostbusters game to come out before I before I pull the Switch. They showed YouTube, Netflix, and
HBO.
HBO, did they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was the other big one.
And maybe they just didn't demo it. And it's essentially you're watching cinema-sized videos on your face. Looks pretty cool. Plus, there's obviously the 360-degree videos that you can fully enjoy as well. The demos weren't great, just on a big screen. And who's the one speaker? She had like a slight smack.
Oh, that's
it was
so bad.
Just enough where I'm like, I can't actually understand you anymore. All I hear is that. I think it was for Pixel stuff, maybe not for this. But anyways, so it's just like Samsung's Gear VR, essentially, but better is how I would describe it. I don't know. I haven't tried it. And I honestly haven't actually read any hands-on experience, eyes-on experience. But man, it sure looks cool.
Yeah.
I feel like VR is next platform computing thing for this century.
I think it's a big deal.
This
I think
decade. Sorry.
Say, I think that it's a first start. Okay, how do I want to say this? I think as far as VR go, like you said, this is the equivalent of the Oculus VR, which I definitely get the sense is it's an okay first start. Because this is Google's challenge. They recognize that VR is coming in a big way. They want to be part of it, but there are technical limitations to what they're trying to do, and especially in the head tracking space. And you know, they can do some of the head tracking, but not all of it. They can do some of the spatial tracking, but not all of it.
Yeah,
and it's like the controller like literally acts like a pointer, but it knows its orientation in space. So it knows if it's twisted or up and down and stuff, but it doesn't know where it is in space, which is different. You know, it's like
use it like a sword.
Correct. You can't use it like
interesting.
A sword.
Oh, I missed like that. Okay.
I have like a laser pointer. And, you know, which is or more importantly, you can't actually use it like a wand. You can't hold it out in front of you and expect it to do what it's supposed to do. But you can also just sit on a couch and like twist it around. Like in there, it's not completely lost. There are different
use cases. Like Wii Tennis, essentially.
Exactly. There are definitely use cases for it. And that's Google's challenge in all of this. Build user experiences that are really solid, that take advantage of the hardware with the limitations that it's. Focus on those use cases. And from what I've read from reviews and stuff, they did that very well. It's clear that that's what they're doing, especially if you've used other VR stuff, and they know what their challenge is, and that's what they're working on.
Cool.
You know, the rest of it is coming in the form of, you know, the next generations. Where does this go with better spatial tracking around them? But it's not there yet. And as far as it goes, this is pretty good. I want to try it so bad I can't stand it. This is awesome.
Did it say when it's available?
November as well.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I guess it's coming to first Pixel phones, so soon.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't give a specific date. They just gave a time period. But it's all kind of coming in November. That's when all this stuff is launching.
Got it.
And
that's cool, man. So
the cost of this early thing will be $79. Did you ever say that? I can't remember.
Yeah, but I said 80.
It's going to cost 80 buckaroos. Which is, you know, not nothing.
Well,
but
if you're getting the phone and therefore and you want to get VR, that's reasonable if you're not getting reasonable. The other stuff.
It's true. But you want to know what is expensive in the VR space? Oh, man. So they had Facebook had their Oculus announcement thing later in the week.
Okay.
And they announced a bunch of new things. But the big thing and the big reason why they wanted to have it is because they announced the Move controllers, which are the controllers that actually track your movement in space. They got a bunch of buttons on it. It goes with both hands. This is similar to the HTC's version of it. Those are going to cost 199 bones for a set. And if you want full room scale tracking, it's become those. I think those are like $50, I think is what they were. But it is now more expensive than the HTC Vive as a platform to get all the same features as the HTC Vive. Well, some of the features, because HTC has the camera module for doing the chaperone stuff, and Oculus doesn't have that yet. That being said, they're building some pretty cool stuff. Oh, they also did improve their headphones. They were talking about how amazing their over-the-ear headphones were. And as I've mentioned, that was like one of my huge disappointments. It's like, their headphones are terrible. Mm-hmm. Well, they seem to have acknowledged that. So they came out with $50 in-ear headphones that snap onto the device and can.
Wow.
Yeah. They're not cheap, but they say that the sound quality on them is so good that they're equivalent to $900 headphones. I actually said that in their speech. Which I was like,
are there $900 headphones?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Doubt it.
I know. Well, A, I doubt they're as good. And B,
yeah, that's what I was saying.
And B, $900 headphones are for ridiculous audiophiles who, part of the reason why it sounds so good is because it costs $900 for the headphones, man. Like, come on, just leave it behind. But they're good, is their point. It seems to be an acknowledgement that their current headphone, although from a getting it on over your ears perspective, was pretty nice because it's built into the headset, so you don't have to go. I mean, they were talking about how you have to go fumbling for your headphones, which is, I think, a little bit. They're exaggerating. They're trying to say, look, our solution did have its advantages, but it wasn't great. They've acknowledged that. I'll leave it be now. That being said, they did have one big announcement of how they will save you money. They have lowered the minimum specs required for a hardware capable computer, which is pretty cool. So they announced that specifically there's one computer that comes pre-configured for $500.
Oh, okay.
So if you look at it, if you have to buy a new computer along with all of the hardware for the VR stuff, the Oculus is now, again, less expensive than that entire same package for the HTC, because the HTC Vive still requires like a $1,200 computer. So,
okay.
So they brought the price back down. It actually uses some pretty cool software, it sounds like, where they're doing some interesting stuff to smooth frames, because that's the biggest problem, is that it requires an incredibly high frame rate in order to be really a 90 frames per second rate in order to be the best experience.
Wow.
And this cheaper computer can't handle that. So natively, so they've had to build software to mimic that and to give the headset a fighting chance, which is interesting. But they also announced a bunch of new software, and this is where I think it becomes really the difference between Google and Facebook becomes important, because Facebook, they really push the idea of what does social look like in the future? What is VR? So like they announced a bunch of new avatar software things like system-wide avatars. They showed off a communication platform where you could be chatting with your buddies, and they would your buddies' avatars would be present with you. The mouths would move with them. They had these like they had different expressions that you could do, like quizzical looks and being excited and stuff. And they said that they were either gesture based or quick key based, so that you could like. And he described them almost like emoticons. So some of it is automatic. Some of it is done by user control, but it gave a very present experience. It was really interesting to watch the video and see like, oh yeah, that looks pretty good. And the other thing is that the eyes do automatic eye tracking. They're not looking at where you're looking. They don't know where you are physically looking, but they know enough about where your head is looking where the digital eyes automatically do subject tracking. That's pretty clever, actually. So it just gives it a much more, instead of these like, you know, just these figures that just sort of exist in space and don't really interact, Facebook's saying, no, we can make this much more interactive. It looked really cool. And pretty exciting. And for, you know, the question of virtual reality, you know, as the next platform, these two are going to be pretty big, because I think Google is going to want to push into this space as well of interacting with people and things over the internet. That's going to be a big space that they're going to want to get into. It's exciting to see what they come up with.
They're doing some cool things.
Yeah.
It's heating up. AI is cool, but I think this is the next one.
Yeah.
We'll leave AI for the next decade.
You think?
Yeah. It's just not there yet.
Yeah, I think VR is going to be big. And not just because I'm going to buy mine this week. Actually, I have to finish paying for it, which is kind of a bummer.
Think about that. Like, the VR, you're willing to spend money on it. And for the AI, you're not willing to go out and trade up your phone for a Pixel. And I get that finances, you got to make choices, all that stuff. But I don't know.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned that, because it's like, I want Google to make AI work with my iPhone. The only reason why I was my only real urge to buy a Pixel was to get the VR part of it.
Hmm.
No, I'm kind of a fanboy, but I don't think I'm the only one. I'm into this VR stuff, but I think a lot of people are, and I think, man, I'm excited. So excited.
I don't know. That to me, it's like, and maybe I'm just not articulating it right, but man, VR definitely seems like it's going to be the next platform.
Yeah. I guess it's weird.
And having some sort of artificial intelligence built into it.
Yeah.
To have like a virtual assistant there.
Yeah.
That you can ask questions.
Jarvis.
Your own little Navi or Jarvis.
whatever. Navi. I don't. It had better not be Navi, man.
That would be hey! So awesome. Over here, maybe for AR, not VR. This'd be sweet. But you know it's coming, and that's one of those things where it's like it's gonna be there and it's gonna help, and that's essentially what AR is gonna. What's gonna make AR work is your artificial intelligent assistant, and
well, yeah, specifically machine vision. Understanding the world that you're seeing and overlaying pertinent information.
Yeah. And I think that's a place where Google will just like, they'll kill it and it will be awesome. But I'm also like, we'll do VR this year, this decade. And I don't know. That's how I see it.
I cannot tell you how excited I am for Thursday, man.
Just a little bit. He's off by about 10 years.
That's fair enough.
I just don't think it's AI. That's fundamentally, I don't think it's AI.
You know, I think, you know what the thing, I think the reason why he feels the way he does and where he might win in the long run is that the speed at which AI innovation will grow, I think will outpace VR. Because VR has the constraints of being hardware based, whereas AI is way more software, computer science, clever programming tricks. And so if AI is going to, as AI advances, it will advance at rates quicker than VR. That being said, VR has more, is further along in its, how easy it is for people to understand and how excited they are about it.
And I think VR is the predecessor to AR, really. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a little bit about this. And I think as opportunities come up where, I don't know, where, like, if you're in your car because it's driving itself, which is an AI thing, I get, you want more immersive experiences while you're sitting there. And I, the other thing I thought, I was thinking about it too, is like, artificial intelligence is not going to help me go through my Facebook feed and check out my latest tweets.
Yeah.
And it might help me with my Final Fantasy, with my, not Final Fantasy, with my fantasy football stuff. But, I just, there's certain things where like, it's not useful for that. It's like, it's a productivity type of thing. And, man, we do a lot of consumption and entertainment, and VR is poised for that. That's what it's designed for.
I agree.
Wow. All right. So you're getting it when? When are you getting your headset?
Thursday.
So next week we should have a full update.
Yeah, it'll be, I'll be annoying. I'll be like, it's amazing.
Okay.
I looked around and saw things.
And it sounds, okay. Oh, so you should just wear it the entire show. Be so sweet. We stream it live, so you could do
it. I'm not saying no. That's true. I could watch us.
You can watch yourself watching yourself.
That's, yeah. I'm in.
You could do it. We could make it happen. I love it. So, anything else? That's the show, I think.
I agree.
Crazy. Yeah, we could Google, and we'll probably dive fairly deepish next week into even more VR, like you talked about. And yeah, there you go. I'm going to quit belaboring the point. We're done. So, thank you for, it just feels weird to just be like, oh, we hit kind of like one big topic, but that's okay. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us and for listening to episode 263. We're going to have a ton of links to all of the articles. And if you want to dig deeper into some of them, we'll have links for you to do that as well. And so it's all there at 263. If you'd like to have those sent directly to you, just sign up. It's easy. And they'll be sent right to you. You can do that anywhere on the website, pretty much. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. Yes, that's right. And if you would like to contribute, we have four different levels at which you can do it. We have fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens. And they each have some pretty awesome levels of reward. And again, you can learn more about that at furloughbros.com. Okay, I am James Furlow, my Mighty Morphin brother is Matthew Furlow, and so this Green Ranger and that Red Ranger will talk next time.
Thank you.